Blog Talk Radio.
Vince, I'm here to talk about the movies, hence the name of the show, Movie Talk with Vince. And we're going to talk this week my overdue reviews. I'm going to be reviewing the movies The Invasion of the Body Snatchers, and I'm also going to talk a little bit about the MCU, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and how it all started with the Iron Man trilogy. Iron Man, Iron Man 2, and Iron Man 3, all starring Robert Downey Jr., and how it's led to our plethora of Marvel films. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. So that's it. Let's go to the movies. All right, Movie Talk with Vince. Now, before I get started, I always like to do, well, first of all, let me get this guest call-in number out there. If you want to join in the chat, you want to talk to me a little bit about your feelings of horror movies today, and especially the Invasion of the Body Snatchers films, or if you want to talk to me a little bit about the MCU and tell me what you feel about the Iron Man trilogy, then that call-in number is 914-205-5404. That's 914-205-5404. Give me a call if you want. Because we're talking about the Invasion of the Body Snatchers and the MCU and its beginnings, its origins with the Iron Man trilogy. And before I do that, let me just get a couple of disclaimers out there for you. Be warned, you're about to hear my opinions. That's right, I'm going to tell you how I feel about things. Oh my God, how horrible could that possibly be? Well, today's world, it seems that if anybody has an opinion, it seems that, oh my God, we need to get rid of them. Because, oh, for God forbid, they have an opinion that's different than yours. Well, my opinion may not be yours. I'm hoping it's not. I'm hoping that I say something that makes you go, hey, let me think about that. Let me call in. Let me tell Vince what I think about this. Or maybe you'll say, hey, I didn't think about that. I want to go check out this movie. So anyway, so you're going to be hearing opinions. And you also may be hearing spoilers. I apologize. I'll try to stay away from the endings of movies as much as I can, but if I'm going to be discussing movies, I may give away certain plot points that make you go, oh, why did you tell me that? So be warned, that may happen. I'm going to try and stay away, but I can't make any guarantees. And lastly, let me always say, don't take my word for it. When it comes to any of these movies, go check them out yourself. See what you feel. And if you have seen them already, check them out again. Maybe your opinion has changed. That's what the great thing about opinions. They are subject to change at a moment's notice. And that's it. So let's get started. Anyway, so I want to start with first, The Invasion of the Body Snatchers. So now, with the Invasion of the Body Snatchers film that I want to talk about is the 70s version. But let me just give it a little bit of a history here. The original Body Snatchers was a book published back in the 1950s that was made into a film starring Kevin McCarthy. It was black and white, and there was absolutely nothing wrong with that movie. That movie is a classic. And if you haven't seen it, I do suggest you go check that one out. Find it somewhere. It is a great movie. It was made in black and white. So that's the biggest problem I have with the original Invasion of the Body Snatchers isn't that it's not a good movie. Like I said, it's a great one, but it is very dated. It was made in the 50s. The original Body Snatchers book, I believe, was meant to be a parable, but it was meant to be kind of a look at the way people were afraid of the communists. It was written during the era of the McCarthy era, and where everybody was thinking that their brothers or their sisters or their friends or their neighbors were all becoming communists. And the original Body Snatchers book and the 1956 film basically play on that fear of the fact that instead of everyone becoming communists, they're becoming aliens. And the story is extremely creepy because it's a story that, if you don't know, the basic premise is plants are being seeded by alien, some kind of alien seed that's coming from space, and the plants are growing into these pods, and instead of growing plants inside these pods, they're growing people. They're clones of us. They read our DNA, then they grow a clone of us, and then our clone kills the original person and then replaces them. And it does it when you're asleep, so you don't even know what's happening. You go to sleep one day, and the next thing you know, you don't wake up, and somebody who looks exactly like you and has your memories does wake up and replaces you in your life. And there's nothing you can do about it. What are you going to do? Not go to sleep? So it's a very creepy story, and it's a very creepy. The first film was very creepy, and has the, and spoiler alert, has a very classic ending of Kevin McCarthy looking straight into the camera and he's saying, "They're coming, they're coming." In essence, breaking the fourth wall and telling everybody in the theater, "This is real. This is happening everywhere. And how do you know it's not?" So everybody at that point is like turning to their husband, their wife, their kids, going, Are you the person I married, or are you an alien replacement? Because how do you know? And according to the story, is you wouldn't know. They have your memories. The only thing they don't have is your personality. And they look like you, they sound like you, they sort of act like you, but they're not you. And slowly they're taking over the planet. And that's why the story in the original is really creepy, and it does still work. It is a well-done movie, but again, it is the 50s. It has a very 50s style of filmmaking, which is not bad. It's just dated. And then in the 70s, they decided to do a remake of it. Now, my feeling is, you know, obviously lots of times remakes happen and they don't always work. It's really hard to improve on a film that is perfect. Well, unfortunately, I don't think the original Invasion of, because as I said, it's kind of dated. So in the 70s, they tried to update it. And the 70s was just a great, great decade for horror movies. We had The Omen. We had Exorcist, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Halloween, all these, Alien, all these great, great horror films that knew how to scare you. And the one thing that's kind of, especially in the 80s and then modern day, we get away from really scary films and become more gory films. And gore isn't really scary. Gore just makes you, you know, get creeped out. You're like, oh, my God, you want to look away. But gore isn't necessarily scary. It's not really terror. There's a big difference. Gore, for me, is more used to give the terror weight. In other words, you see something scary. Psycho is a great example of this. You see the death of your first death in the film, and then it takes forever for the next one to happen. So the entire time, you're waiting for it. Alien is the same way. The first death happens fairly early on in the movie, and then it takes forever for the next one to happen. And during that waiting time, you're just on the edge of your seat waiting for something to happen. And the remake of Invasion of the Body Snatchers, the one made in the 70s starring Donald Sutherland, captures that feeling to a T. The entire movie, it's not gory. This is not a gory story. The deaths are not violent. The deaths happen while you're asleep. You don't wake up, and you go to sleep, and then you're turned to dust, and the next thing you know, somebody who looks just like you has now replaced you. And the way that they did in the 70s, obviously now it's in color, they hired some fairly new actors at the time, others who were somewhat well-known, like Donald Sutherland, Karen Allen. Karen Allen? No. I always get the actors and everyone confused. Anyway, I'll look that one up while I'm talking. Anyway, so you've got Jeff Goldblum and Leonard Nimoy, who at that point didn't want to be playing Spock anymore. But so you're watching this movie going, hey, that's Spock. And it takes you a little bit. It makes you put you on ease because you're so used to seeing him playing Spock that it's like, oh, my God. He's not Spock. This guy is a jerk. Brooke Adams. I don't know why I always get her confused with the actress from Raiders of the Lost Ark. Brooke Adams. So it's Donald Sutherland, Veronica Cartwright from Alien, Jeff Goldblum, Leonard Nimoy, and it's just a perfect cast. And everybody, Jeff Goldblum is not playing the type of character that you're used to seeing, especially if you're used to the Jurassic Park. I think that we should go do that Sting. It's not that kind of Jeff Goldblum. This is a Jeff Goldblum who's a little bit annoying because he's a little bit of a pompous ass, but he's very much, I mean, when I grew up in the 70s, my friends weren't like him, but I knew my parents had friends who were like this guy. I remember seeing people like this going, yeah, you know, who thought that they knew everything and that the establishment was all wrong. And this film, the establishment is wrong. It turns out they're replacements. They're aliens, actually. But he's somewhat of a jerk. But at the same time, he's one of our main heroes. And when he starts to realize what's happening, you feel his terror. And that's what's great about that remake was, yeah, with most movies, if they're a good movie, you sympathize with the main character and you live vicariously through them. You're living that adventure of that film through those characters. And when you're watching a movie like Invasion, when the characters are up against something that they can't fight, and you just get so frustrated because you feel their frustration. And like I said, with this story, what's so amazing is that there is no battle. There's no monster. You know, with a Mike Myers or a Freddy Krueger or whatever, you could at least battle them. You could take a stick and hit them in the head or whatever. Try and stab them in the face or shoot them in the eyes. That might not stop them, but at least you have that option. With the body snatchers, you don't. There's nothing you can do. Every time they find a pod, they destroy it. But guess what? Then another one pops up, and another one pops up. At one point, Donald Sutherland's character, spoiler alert, finds a factory where the pods are being grown. He thinks he can blow it up. I hate to tell you, it still doesn't stop. It's like nothing can stop this. And how do you when it's becoming something that's global? It's worldwide. It's like and to me, it goes along the lines of Night of the Living Dead and any of those zombie movies where it's like they're just popping up all over the place. How do you stop them? How do you get ahead of the curve? And with a movie like Invasion of the Body Snatchers, you can't. So that's why, for me, it's still the creepiest, and it's because it's slowly paced. But it's not too slow where it gets boring. It's slow because it needs to be put you on edge, where you're just waiting for something to happen. And at the beginning, only one character sees this is happening. Everyone thinks that she's nuts. And then suddenly it's like, no, she's not nuts. This isn't some kind of weird conspiracy theory. This is really happening. And then what's crazy about it is then you're sitting at home going, how do I know it's not happening now? It's like watching the X-Men. How do you know that there really isn't an alien invasion coming? How do we know that this is not really happening? Yes, it's a science fiction. Yes, it's someone made this up, but how do we know? So that's why, for me, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, it's just such a great, creepy movie. And if you haven't seen it, the 70s version is the one to see. They tried doing remakes of it, I believe, in the 90s. And again, like every 10 years or 10 or 15 years, they're trying to do a new one. They did one called The Body Snatchers, another one called The Invasion. None of them really worked. The problem was they, I think, got away from the feeling of tension and unease, and they just kind of made them more like action films, action horror films, and that's not really what the Invasion of the Body Snatchers was. The Body Snatchers was a parody, shall we say, or, you know, whatever, of the McCarthyism. And unfortunately today, it's maybe not necessarily with communism, but we're still, even today, so looking at our brothers and neighbors and whatever, saying, are you the same person that I saw yesterday? Just, it seems like the world that I was living in is now changed. And that's what that movie is all about. So there you go. That's my overdue review of Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Like I said, if you haven't seen any of them, definitely check out the original, and definitely, but really, the 70s version is my preferred version. But that's the one where it's just put you on edge the entire time, but to a point you're going, ah, and spoiler alert, I'm not going to tell you the ending, but the ending makes you go, oh my God. And that was also the great thing about the 70s, was the 70s wasn't afraid to play with that, to have that, you know, ending that wasn't necessarily, let's all tie everything up with a bow kind of thing. Everybody lived happily ever after type of ending. This was an ending that made you go, what? It wasn't the original ending. It wasn't, our hero looking at the camera going, they're coming. But it was pretty close. Anyway, so Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Go check it out if you can. Find it on Netflix or however else you find old movies. And then what else did I watch this week? Well, this week I was just watching a little movie that started in MCU called Iron Man. Now, what's funny about Iron Man was I had forgotten quite how long ago and how long it's been since that movie originally came out. It's been 15 years, folks. I mean, it's shocking to see that the MCU has been going strong for 15 years, but when you look at how many movies they've cranked out in that time, it's like, oh, my God, they've bested James Bond and many other film franchises that have been going strong for decades. It's because Disney, once they bought Marvel, they said, oh, we're just going to crank out like movie after movie after movie, and sometimes we'll do like 3 or 4 movies a year. So after 15 years, well, that's a lot of movies. But it all started with Iron Man. All right. So my feeling is that the original Iron Man, Jon Favreau, who directed the film and also played Happy Hogan in it, he definitely knew what he was doing. He still does. He basically resurrected Star Wars from the dead and gave us The Mandalorian, which made everyone go, yes, I love Star Wars again. And he did that with Marvel. He gave us basically the Iron Man comic book film that we all wanted. Now, Marvel had already struck pay dirt with their Spider-Man and X-Men films, but those sequels started to not do so well, and fans were going, wait a minute, what? But Jon Favreau said, no, I'm going to get us back on track, and I'm going to start a franchise that will eventually lead to all these films connecting and creating a team of heroes called the Avengers. And if the first film works, then great. Then we can eventually move into making an Avengers movie. Obviously, if the first film worked. And it still does. I watched it today. And the only thing to me that made me laugh was that it is a 15-year-old film. 99% of the references still hold true today, so it doesn't necessarily feel like a 15-year-old film, except for the fact that in the beginning of the movie, Tony mentions MySpace. And I'm going, any kid watching the film now, we go, what the hell is he talking about? What is a MySpace page? But the thing is, 15 years ago, MySpace was the most popular social media network out there. There was no Instagram. There was no Pinterest. There was definitely no Facebook. It was all MySpace. And Yahoo was still a popular website. Google was only just really becoming big. And so to me, when I was watching the movie, I was going, oh, well, my God, MySpace. I forgot about that. But other than that, the movie is perfectly cast. I may have gone with somebody different for Pepper Potts, but Gwyneth Paltrow is fine. She does a good job, and her banter with Robert Downey Jr. is perfect. So I guess they did know what they were doing. So, and she has been playing Pepper ever since. So she's definitely proven herself. But the rest of the cast, you couldn't imagine anybody else. Even Terrence Howard, who played Roddy originally, Roddy Rhodes, he was perfect in the movie. And I can't imagine, and the whole film was perfectly paced, the action, the story, and you really cared about the characters. And at the end, when, spoiler alert, Tony reveals that he is Iron Man to the world, you're like, okay, this is cool. And I remember watching it the first time in the theaters with my dad and walking up that theater going, yes. And when I watched it again, you know, 15 years later, I still felt like, yes. And when he says Iron Man, he says, I am Iron Man. And it goes into that song that I just cranked up there at the beginning of this bit. It's great. I'm just going, yeah. I couldn't wait for number two. But now the problem is with number two, and again, if you haven't seen the Iron Man films, it is hard to watch them as a trilogy because so much happens in between, especially two and three. In between one and two, the only film that came out, I believe, was The Incredible Hulk. So that one is fine. So one and two pretty much do work as a sequel. They go into, because part two actually does pick up right from the ending of part one, so there is no lapse in time in between the two films. So they do work as a pair, as a duo, shall we say, or whatever. The only problem, honestly, with part two, and a lot of people at the time or in hindsight have probably given the film more harsher criticism than I think it deserves. I think overall the film works. It's just one of the villains, I think they went a little bit too far in making him comical, and that's the character of Justin Hammer. He's a great character, but he doesn't really have much weight because they portray him mostly as a buffoon, and everything he does is wrong, and his weapons don't always work. And I'm like, I personally think that they needed to make him more of a threat for the film to really work, but it's not too bad. And the Vanko character as Whiplash, he's he's great. So to me, you know, Mickey Rourke does a great job with that role. And overall, I would give the film, it's maybe not as great as the first one, but it's pretty close. It's pretty close. I probably would have made, like I said, the character of Hammer a little bit more of a threat, less of a buffoon, and it would have been perfect in that respect. But otherwise, it's still a fine film. Unfortunately, with part three, they had an Avengers movie in between, so if you haven't seen that, then you might be confused by why is Tony acting the way he is. Well, now here's the thing that I love about part three. Why a lot of people, I think he also gets too harshly criticized. Part three has a great backstory of Tony now suffering from PTSD. He's, you know, after the events of the Avengers, he's now basically going crazy because he just literally saved the planet but nearly died doing so. He's somebody who just came back from a war, and a war that lasted about a weekend. So he basically had, imagine going into, like, Vietnam, but having the whole thing condensed over the course of just a couple of days. And it also happened, and part of it happened in outer space. This is a hard thing for him to grapple with, and I think that part of the story is absolutely well done. And the main villain is fine. I have no problem with it. I think overall the story is well done. The only problem with it was, again, they created a villain and then turned him into a buffoon. And that's again, spoiler alert, they create the character of the Mandarin, and then turned out that the Mandarin is actually not really the real Mandarin. Somebody else is the real Mandarin. And this guy is just a front, which is fine. I have no problem with that. I think that's actually a pretty cool idea. It's a fake out. But when they made fake Mandarin, very much a buffoon, comic relief, that's the way I went. I was like, okay, they took what they do with the Hammer in the second film, and they went, and Hammer was almost too far. This one was definitely too far. Now, I love Ben Kingsley, don't get me wrong. I think in the beginning of the film, when he is when he appears to be the main villain, is awesome, and he's great. It's one of the reasons why I think the fall for him becoming this buffoon is too much of a fall. It would be like if in The Empire Strikes Back or Return of the Jedi, we suddenly found out that Darth Vader took off his mask, and he was this nerdy buffoon guy. He was Sheldon Cooper from The Big Bang Theory, and suddenly we're like supposed to laugh at him. I was like, no, he's the villain. I'm fine with Darth Vader taking off his mask and being an old man who's been beaten and he's now a good man and whatever. That's fine. If he had taken off the mask and suddenly he was like wearing glasses and goes, oh, excuse me. He's like, what? That's not Darth Vader. And that's the problem with this. And suddenly the Mandarin becomes this buffoonish British actor who's a drunk. And it's like, what I would have loved to have seen is if at the end of the movie, I would have been fine with that reveal of him being a buffoon if when at the end of the movie he's being taken away to prison, if we find out in maybe in a closing scene that he actually that was a double bluff, that in other words he was pretending to be a buffoon so that Iron Man and War Machine wouldn't kill him. Well, actually in that film he's the Iron Patriot, but still that the two of them wouldn't kill him, so he pretended to be a buffoon and then they took away to prison and find out actually he really is the Mandarin. He actually is what he pretended to be in the beginning. It was actually all a double bluff. I actually wish they'd gone with that direction. Then I would have been happy with it. But whatever. And now they have brought him back, so hopefully they'll try and do something with the character to make him less annoying or whatever. But anyway, so my feeling overall is that I still love the original Iron Man. The Ironmonger villain is probably one of the best, is definitely one of the best villains that they've had in the series. The first film tells the backstory of Tony very well, and everybody's just, can't pick up any faults with the first film. Second film has a great backstory. Tony, and it has some of my favorite scenes in all three films, actually. The whole backstory of Tony discovering that the thing that is in his chest, which is keeping him alive, is also slowly killing him because it's making his blood toxic and it's basically giving him cancer. So he has to figure out some way to get that out of here. So he now starts drinking, becomes an alcoholic, and he's now depressed because he thinks he's dying. He is dying. He doesn't even think he's dying. He is dying. And it takes Nick Fury of S.H.I.E.L.D. to come in and slap him around and say, Now, here's a video. Watch this. It's an old film of your dad's. And that is probably one of my favorite scenes in any of the in the Avengers films, is that scene in part two when, if you haven't seen the movie, spoiler alert, there's a scene where Tony watches a old film footage of his father, who has since passed away. We find out later that his father was killed in a car crash and was murdered by the enemies of S.H.I.E.L.D., Hydra, and their main I won't go into that. But anyway, we know that in this film, Tony's parents are dead. That's all you need to know. And Tony did not have a good relationship with his dad. And his dad died when Tony was just a teenager. Now he's watching this, and his dad talks straight to the camera and says, "Tony, this is for you. You're too young to understand this now, but hopefully someday in the future you'll watch this and you'll be able to finish my work." And it's the one time where Downey Jr.'s acting in this scene is just so heart-wrenching, because even though he doesn't have any lines, it's just him watching this, but you can see in his eyes that he's going like, "What? This man who I thought didn't give a damn about me, actually," and then at the end of the scene, and I'm like crying watching it again, at the end of the scene, spoiler alert, his dad says, "You know, my greatest creation was you." And it's the first time that Tony's ever heard his dad say that. And it's too late, because his dad is long since dead, and so he can't like go up there and hug the man now. But it's the first time where he's like, "Oh my God, I misjudged this man my entire life. He actually did love me. And he just didn't know how to say it. And this is the one time where he actually did." And it's caught on film. And that's why, to me, Iron Man 2 has some of the best bits in all the Avengers movies. And like I said last week on my last show, that one of the things that's great about the Avengers movies is that there is an emotional connection where the characters actually learn something. They're well-rounded. And in this one, Tony is just like, "Oh, my God, you're sitting there going, oh, this poor guy. He just wanted to have a good relationship with his dad, and he never got a chance to do that because he thought his dad hated him. Now it turns out he found out, you know, many years later that his dad actually loved him." And you don't expect that in a superhero film. And then the rest of the movie goes on. It's got the action, adventure, and everything. So like I said, the only part of the part two that I have any criticism with, honestly, is the Tony Sclaterry character, turning him into a buffoon. Other than that, I think it's a decent movie. And then, you know, which is Tony Slattery. Slattery's three. Right? Yeah, that's three. Part two is with Whiplash and Justin Hammer, who's also too much of a buffoon. Anyway, so my feeling is, if you haven't seen the Avengers films and you haven't been watching the Marvel movies, you need to go check them out and start off from the beginning. Check out Iron Man, Iron Man 2, and Iron Man 3. They're great movies. They have a little bit of issues with part two and part three, as I said, but they're pretty good. Go check them out. And obviously they've blossomed into this huge multimedia franchise that doesn't seem to be stopping anywhere. So we shall see what goes on next. I think next up is the Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania. So we'll see where we go with that one. Anyway, so here we are at the last minute and a half of my show. So I'll start wrapping things up, telling everybody, thank you for listening. Thank you for making this Movie Talk with Vince as much of a success as it is, whatever success it is. And I will keep doing this for as long as I feel like doing it. So thank you for listening. And next week, I plan on talking about James Bond. I have that loaded up in my DVD player next. So I'm going to be starting the Bond films and talk a little bit about what I feel was some of the best moments of Bond, what were some of the worst moments, and whatever, and why I hope that they don't stop making Bond films anytime soon. Anyway, so for me, that's Vince. This has been Movie Talk. I want to say thank you for listening, and I will talk again. And as always, don't take my word for it. Go check out the movies. See what you tell me what you think. Good night, everyone.